we are not going to be here at some point, and they got to be able to navigate that. So are you giving them the tools to navigate life's twists and turns?
Yeah. I know I'ma get it, I just don't know how. Hard up on the stage.
Welcome to the Create Your Own Lane podcast. My guest today is Justin Climo. He is the athletic director and basketball coach at the Stevenson School in Pebble Beach, California. I'm going to call you Climo. I'm not going to call you Justin because that feels weird. But how are you doing, man? I know you and I, we met during the pandemic, which is kind of a weird time to meet somebody, but it was definitely perfect. And your life pace has changed a lot since that time. So since that change of pace, man, how have you been doing? You weren't playing sports. And I think you guys just concluded sports. How are you doing right now?
I'm doing great. And just to the name thing, Climo is what everybody calls me. There's probably two people in the world that call me Justin. And so that's probably the right deal there. And how am I doing? So we've actually had a really good spring. We made a decision to field the traditional spring sports here at the school, even though the state reconfigured everything and moved basketball and soccer into the spring. But as a small school who relies on multi-sport athletes, it would have stripped our teams down. And I didn't want to put the kids in a position where they had to choose and potentially let one of the adults in their life down. So we just made a decision that we're going to play spring sports because they got canceled last year and it would level the playing field, since then everyone would have lost a season. And so we've had a great, great year. Once we got back to campus April 12th, navigating, you know, the last 6 weeks has been really interesting. Masks everywhere, COVID protocols. We're a residential school, so we have people living on campus. But all in all, as you know, we talk all the time, there's COVID winds all around you, swirling around. You just got to grab them. And I feel that we've been able to do that this year.
Absolutely, man. That perspective is great. You're right. We do talk a lot about that. This next segment here, man, I call it, you know, we're going to do context before content. And I want, you know, our guests to get to know you. I'm not really sure who all hits play, but most are East Coast, Midwest, kind of where I'm from. So I think you're in three roles, man, that are very interesting and demanding of your time and leadership. And those three roles are the two, obviously, that I went over, which is the athletic director and the basketball coach. But I think that third one that we're going to talk a lot about is the parenting and being a parent. But would love for you to just share your professional journey, just so listeners kind of get a feel for, you know, where you've been before you've gotten to where you are.
Perfect. Since before we started recording, we were talking about the beach and how, as a Midwesterner, there's just beaches and they're all the same. And I was telling you that, no, there's different types of sand and where you are on the coast matters. And so for those listeners that are East Coasters, Midwesterners, we are located on the central coast of California, the Monterey Peninsula in Pebble Beach. I am about, I don't know, a 10-minute walk from the Pacific Ocean. And the state of California, if you haven't been out here, is unique in that you can drive from top to bottom and takes you about 12 hours to do the thing. Whereas where you're at, you can hit a bunch of different states pretty easily. That's not the case here. To even leave the state, it's about a 5-hour hike up over the mountain into Nevada. So I don't know if anybody needs that, but I always think it's interesting when we talk about that professionally. So I'm actually an alum of the school that I work at, Stevenson School. I graduated in 93, went to UC Davis and was a manager on the basketball team initially, and then worked my way into an assistant role. I was fortunate enough to be part of a national championship in 1998. And then 99, left to go start teaching high school and took a job at a local public school in Sacramento, about 1,800 students, El Camino, and was there from 99 until 2008 when my daughters, since we're going to talk about family, were 5 and 3 respectively. And I wanted to move home to be closer to my mother, who had a big role in their lives. So we moved back to the peninsula and I took a job at Palma school, which is an all-boys Catholic school. Taught 2 years there, religion and English. And then my alma mater came calling, and I was fortunate enough to get a job here and have been here for, this is the 11th year and my fourth as the athletic director. In this role, I was the activities director and taught history and religion for my first 7 years back at the school.
Thanks for that, man. I love hearing journeys. I love kind of seeing where those twists and turns start and lead to. And I think it's really cool that you're back to a place that meant a lot to you. And I'm sure it's special every day to walk those halls and walk that campus. So that's real cool. Talking about parenting in sports. Before we talk about parenting, I think it's important for, I asked you this before I hit record, but I think it's important for you to give us just some context on your roster. And when I say your roster, I mean your kiddos. So for me, I'm a young parent that is a girl dad, and she is close to 2 years old, but not there yet. So that's kind of the phase we're at right now. And I'm excited to speak to you about this because, not saying you're the guru of parenting, but I think this is very helpful information we're going to go over. So why don't you name off your roster of climos you got over there? How many names, ages?
No problem. And I'm going to start with the entire family because I often forget this when I'm doing introductions of who I am at the school. And for the listeners as well, I mentioned it's a residential campus. We're a boarding school, so we live on campus here. My commute is about 100 yards from my front door to my office, and I've worn that out during COVID. It's the only two places I go, so I don't have to wear a mask. I get to hang out in my safe spaces. But my family roster, my wife Amy, my eldest child Kaylee is a senior. She graduated on Sunday a couple days ago. My middle child Sydney is a sophomore, and my youngest Lincoln is a fifth grader. So girl, boy. And then I have three other females in the house in my canine unit. I have a 13 and a half year old corgi that continues to give us pump fakes as she nears the end and acts like she's dying and then pops up and she's fine for a couple weeks. And then I've got a 4 year old corgi. And then we just rescued a 1 year old that joined us about 3 weeks ago, is super skittish and has all these anxiety problems. And, you know, hopefully this thing will work out, but it's been rough the first couple weeks here.
Wow. You exceeded expectations with that roster. I asked for kids, you went dogs, and I'm glad you don't have any reptiles over there. So that's good. But what made me want to talk about this topic, man, is I heard this and I thought it hit deep, but I wanted to speak with somebody like yourself about it, and I have some things that you and I are going to go back and forth on. But I heard this, and I want to get your thoughts. It talked about how kids have not changed, and I'm talking in sports. The kids have not changed. The parents have changed. And that hit deep. And kind of the direction I want to go to get us started is that foundation piece. Talking about foundation. I believe parenting is the foundation of life. We don't necessarily become what we always hear, but we definitely become what we see and hear the most. Mm-hmm. And I think parents have this role where they're able to be very intentional with it or unintentional, which also affects your child. When you hear that foundational piece, you know, as we're talking about parenting here, what are some foundations that are really important to you, you know, when raising your three little ones?
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm going to rattle these off. And as you know, I have super duper high powered attention deficit issues. And so this is not going to be a linear list. It's going to be whatever pops into my head at the time. But I will say what you just asked about the intentionality versus unintentionality of parenting, the effect that it has. I think people and me, I'm not going to speak sample size of one, have to make decisions on what their non-negotiables are. And in our household, it has been, you know, a couple different things that we think are important. One, being an athlete. You're going to play three sports a year until you get through your sophomore year, and then we can discuss pivoting into sports specialization if that's something that you want to do. But up until then, you're going to play three sports a year. And that may be theater, right? You may jump into something, but you're going to be on a team of some sort. And that starts when they're younger. So I think we got our kids involved in recreational stuff at the age of 5, and they try, they sport sample, they try everything. And if there's something that they're really into, we go in hard on it until they get tired of it, and then we move on. But at no point is it, hey, we're just going to be a softball player. It's we're going to do this, travel, do whatever you want to do when this is your favorite at the time, but you're also going to play basketball. You're also going to try lacrosse. You're going to do these other things. So that's an important piece for us because of the structure, role definition, disappointment, failure, everything that sports brings to the table. We feel that that gives you the root and the foundation of life, right? How do you respond to those things? And then as a parent, we can help them navigate dealing with those type of situations. Two, there is a wilderness trip that our school offers. It's 11-day backpacking trip that all of my children are going to go on. It's a non-negotiable in our household. We don't even talk about it. And it allows us to put those stakes in the ground, which then allows some flexibility in other areas to give and take with your kids as they get a little bit older. So knowing that these are the two things you're doing that we're never talking about again, and here's why, you know, allows us to take some stock in the other things. So I would say that's a big piece for us, using your word intentionality, that we have decided on for our kids. And then, you know, summer camps and things of that nature where there's exposure to wilderness hiking for the same reason as sports, right? It teaches you how to be independent. It teaches you how to solve problems. It helps you learn to rely on others and to be relied upon. And I think that's really important in the foundation of teaching your kids, you know, what the world expects out of them. And then I'm going to give one more and then we'll kind of steer back to this. And then I think the other thing, because you led with parents have changed, I think what's happened, especially in my generation, so I'm a child of the baby boomer generation. And as a vague generality, what happened to us is we were kind of the latchkey group where our parents were working and we were left alone to do our thing and figure it out and all the goods and bads that came with that. And then there was kind of a boomerang effect when our generation had children, which almost went to the opposite, where this may be loaded, but we're just over-involved. And the paranoia of letting our kids fail, I think it's almost like this psychological, hey, my parents were always gone, so I need to always be present. Where I think the key is kind of striking a balance in the middle and being very intentional about your decision-making in attending sports games, attending performances, and do you want to be there all the time? Do you want to never be there? Do you want to strike a balance so that you can teach them to be independent? And I think those are things, to your point, should be intentional decisions, not ones that you happen upon. And my boss, probably, you know, one of the smartest people I've ever been around, and he says all the time, it's like, you can choose your habits or you can fall into them. And you want to make sure that you are choosing the ones that you want to sustain you. And the same thing goes for parenting. And so that's my answer to that. And I have a follow-up on a few other pieces if you want.
Man, you gave a lot of gems there, but one I really want to hit on, because that is a different perspective. And you know, let me first say this disclaimer. I feel like you should always have a disclaimer with anything. You know, nothing we're saying, we're telling someone else to do with their child. We're just sharing perspectives. But where I thought was interesting is you have this approach of like, this is what you're doing, opposed to creating this choice. Where I thought I loved and agree with you is what sports do for the individual. Where I think we struggle as parents, which is kind of why I love that quote that we started with, is allowing them to go through that. And I'm going to go basketball reference here, then I'm going to come right back. But I think the best basketball players are the ones that are really good with the ball in their hands that create space. Like a good player creates space. I think a good parent or a good leader is the exact same way, creating space for your kids to go through some of the things that you're going through. Because I think we both can agree on sports do all these things, but does the parent become, I'll use the term helicopter, and come right in and swoop in? Well, they're not going to get that experience if you're just pulling them out. So I guess for you, and maybe I answered it already, but I'm curious, doing this with 3 kids, having the structure of what you're just talking about, how are you creating the space for your children to learn these lessons that you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. A couple things on that. And I think as you said, the disclaimer. We're not telling anybody what to do. God forbid. You know, I've got three kids. They're all at different aspects of their life. They've all had their failures and their successes. And, you know, I just graduated a high school senior and everything that comes with that, right? What decisions are now going to face her on a daily basis and how does she navigate that? And right before we jumped on recording, I was talking to a colleague and we were debriefing the last two or three days of our seniors' decision-making and what was that like? And, you know, how are our spouses handling that? And how do we make sure that we have a thumb on what's going on, but create exactly the space that you're talking about, because they're going to be in college in 3 months and we're not going to be there. So I think to your point, it's figuring out what your non-negotiables are, like I described, what are the barriers, and how do you consistently talk about those standards, almost like a basketball program versus rules, right? This is the expectation. These are the core values. This is what we're going to lead up to. Create open lines of communication and trust. And know that there are going to be failures and you can't swoop in and save them. So how do you give them the tools, right? How do you prepare the child for the road versus the road for the child, right? Another cliche that's in parenting. And I think, you know, some of the things that are more specific, and then I'll come back to your question, are, I think it's important. And part of this, Mo, is tough because I'm an educator, right? I see this all the time and I get to see the best of parenting and the worst of parenting and the impact it has on kids. And I get to cherry pick. Just like a coach, I can go watch practice, take what I like, leave what I don't like. And so in theory, I have this recipe for how to be the best parent I can be by stealing from what I've been watching for 25 years. And I'm a high school teacher, so I'm seeing kind of the back end. And then I can reverse engineer, you know, hey, this is how this worked in this particular situation. And so I think really paying attention to your children's peer group is really important. And making sure that you manage the parents of your children's peer group. And they are a reflection of what that child in theory is going to grow up with. So if you're not loving what the parents' situation is like and how they're navigating things in their orbit, you know, you're probably going to need to wade in a little bit and get some separation in that relationship in a constructive way for your own kid. And one way to do that for me was always like, hey, can I go to so-and-so's house? Absolutely not. But they can come over here and hang out as much as they want, where you're creating the structures and the expectations that, you know, you think are important, whatever those might be. And then I think the other thing is what you said is giving them choice. And yeah, I did say, you are going to do this, you are going to do this. But within those options, the sports piece, they had choice. What do you want to play? What do you want to be involved in? Right? Music is part of that. Like I mentioned, theater. Anything along those lines, it's like the structure of what those activities do to create independent thinkers is what's important. What those happen to be within that, like whatever. So last thing on that, you know, my middle child got to high school and she's like, hey, I want to play lacrosse instead of softball. It's like, cool, go ahead. Go tell the coach you're no longer playing softball. It's like, I don't want to do that. It's like, okay, well, that's the price of admission. That's the responsibility piece. You have to own your choices. And the softball coach has been coaching you since you were 10 years old. If you no longer want to play, you need to go tell him so that you can go play lacrosse. She still plays softball. She made that choice. She didn't want to do the difficult thing. So a little bit of a ramble there, but I think, you know, what you're really getting at is how do you, as a parent myself, I won't do anything for my kids that they can do for themselves. So it's like, hey, dad, can you get this? No, you can reach it. Get it yourself. Meanwhile, my wife, right, she's a mom. She has a little bit different approach. And you can see that, right? And what they want from her and what they ask her to do that they just won't even bother asking me to do anymore. And again, intentional choice, what I felt was necessary. But then my partner, who's raising them as well, has a little bit different approach. So they kind of get the best of both worlds. And they understand even in the household unit, Mo, hey, I got to learn how to navigate adults. Like this person's that. All right, how do I play this game? And it teaches them that life skill as well.
That's the good thing about you is you can answer a question and then just give us a little bit more than we asked for. So that's the good thing about you, man. That's the good thing about you. Again, staying on topic here, the sport aspect, because we're talking about parenting. We are talking about in sports. You're a coach as well. And I think the unique part that coaches can offer, because you were taught what you really were talking about before, and one of your answers was, as a coach, we watch film in order to evaluate what we need to work on. You know, I use the word studying. I love to study greatness. I love to invest my time studying greatness. But I can't just go in and do exactly what they do. I have to craft it into my own. But and in regards to sports, you know, I think coaches have a really good opportunity to see what they don't want to be just by reviewing that film. And I think parents think they are involved because they're at the games, but they don't understand you're not involved because you're just yelling something opposite of what the coaches say. What I'm going at, or what I want to bounce back and forth on, is the difference in supporting your child opposed to hurting your child. Mm-hmm. Like, it's funny, my wife and I are both former collegiate athletes. We have a very young child, as I shared with you when we started. But everybody thinks when you're the coach, we just got her involved in the gymnastics. I feel like there's people like watching me to like coach her. And I really just let her go. And when she plays some of the sports that you're talking about, I'm going to do the same thing. I think the most important coaches that I had at a very young age were the ones that coached my character over my skill. Mm-hmm. And what I kind of want to talk about right now is how, or your opinion, what is important for parents to, or how should they provide this support for their kids while playing sports? Because at the end of the day, I don't think any of them are trying to be malicious in their intent, but I don't think they understand at all that they're hindering the child's growth, just yelling things constantly in the stands or giving evals right after a game. What's your thoughts on that, man? Let's bounce on that.
Okay, first of all, great job getting her in gymnastics. It's a foundational tool that will help her in every aspect of what she does as an athlete.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. It just really helps us from having our couch dented in and the lamp broken in our house. But thanks.
Yep, but it's all good, you know, and eventually we'll see where it takes her. And, you know, starting with the analogy of what is a parent's role. So I talk to our athletes all the time, right? Especially you got the kid who wants to question calls, wants to give you advice. And I just say, hey, look, you want to play, coach, or ref? Pick one. You can't do all three. And I want to play. Okay, great. Then play, and I'm going to coach, and they're going to ref. Don't say anything to either of us, right? And it's the same thing for parents. Look, do you want to be a parent? Do you want to be a player? You want to be an official? You want to be a coach? In that situation, pick. Because right now, when you start confusing those roles, it's like your team. You brought up the basketball analogy, and you got the kid that can't throw the ball in the ocean, but he wants to jack up a bunch of three balls because his teammate does it. And you're like, hey, don't do that. Like, that's not your role. Go to the bucket, get fouled, shoot free throws. But I want to shoot the three. Well, you can't make the three. So it's like, hey, do you want to be a parent? What is the role definition of being a sports parent? Your job is to be your kid's biggest fan, to tell them, I love watching you play, and to be there to support them in navigating all of the ups and downs that come with failure. It doesn't mean you swoop in and you're the savior. You know, your son or daughter's not getting the playing time that you deserve, so you're on the phone, hey, they need to play more. It's like, no, your role is to hear them, let them vent to you, take a beat, and then say, hey, are you okay with that? Do you want to solve that? Here are some steps that you can go through. Step one, talk to your coach. Step two, blank. Step three is never let me insert myself, because ultimately you're taking the power away from your kid to self-advocate, and that's never going to come back. And so I think that's one deal. What's your role as a parent? To sit in the stands, clap, be positive, be uplifting, and celebrate the entire team. It's not about your kid being the top of the trophy. And if you're struggling with that, and I heard this on my pod the other day, it was, hey, just because your kid isn't a great baseball player doesn't mean that you're a bad parent. It just means that, hey, this is where they happen to be in that particular life endeavor. And your job is to help them figure out what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and how to fill those gaps. And so I think what you said, they're not trying to be malicious, but there's your intention and then there's your impact. And I think what happens is your intentions, which may be good, I think I'm helping by yelling, shoot it. All you're doing is confusing the kid who may be getting another instruction from his coach. And so the best thing you can do is just sit there, smile, help, be on your phone, have a conversation like you're watching the game at home, so that it's not this big event that is this life-changing moment every time that kid goes out to play a sport. It's an activity. It's a game. It's meant to teach life skills. As the athletic director, sports for me are about teaching leadership, followership, and learning to be part of something bigger than yourself. That's it. And the process of growth is more important than whatever that outcome is. Very few of us are going to get paid to play a sport. So what's the goal of them being involved? Hey, Mikey's not playing right now. Great. He's learning a really valuable lesson about how to be a teammate, about how to support those that are playing, and then how to work to try to get himself into that role. Well, I'm just going to put him on another team. Okay, cool. What are you teaching him? When things get tough, you quit and go find an easier opportunity? Like, I don't buy that, and I don't think it's very healthy.
Yeah, you brought up a good point, man. It made me think about something I saw years ago. I'm not sure if you've ever seen it or anybody listening has ever seen it, but Kevin Eastman, very, very well-known basketball coach. Research him if you don't know him.
Oh, I got the book.
There you go. But he talks about this exercise he did where he – to teach parents the damage of coaching from the sideline. And he had a parent wear blindfolds, and everybody in the stands had to yell commands while that parent with the blindfold had a basketball in their hand. And the commands were supposed to help that person make a shot. And the analogy and why he said to do this was, that's exactly what your child feels like when they're in the game and they're constantly hearing commands outside of their coach. And I thought that was really cool. I thought, like, if I was ever in a space like yours where parents are very involved, like they drive from home right to, you know, the local school, which is usually pretty close, where for me, I'm distant. You know, parents will come pretty far to our games, or, you know, they're louder, or whatever, we're playing arenas. We usually don't get that. But at the youth level games, you hear that a lot. But I thought that exercise was so cool and such a great lesson to share with parents. So I wanted to plug that in there, man. Have you ever heard that before?
Well, yeah, I have this book, and I haven't ever done that, but I'll give you one more just you made me think about. You'll have the parents in the stands that every time their kid has the ball, let's say, are yelling, shoot it, and then when it's in somebody else's hand, it's like, pass it! And it's like, where does that come from? Look at the belief that somehow that validates that kid as an athlete because he scored or he got this statistic or whatever it is. And somehow that may leverage them into a position to be on a better team or to go to college or whatever, when the reality is you're a college coach. I promise you, you're not scouring the box scores to look at points. You go watch a kid and you know this kid's a player. He's not a player. Doesn't matter how many points he scores, right? Is this guy, is he a glue guy? Does he make his teammates better? The things that college coaches actually look at, and high school coaches or club coaches, and the things that parents believe and athletes believe that they look at, the divide is so ridiculously wide that it leads to some of those behaviors. And it's just fascinating because it's not malicious, like you said. It's just, this is going to sound really bad, and please receive it in the spirit it's intended. It's uneducated in regards to what the outcome you're hoping to reach is and what the pathway for getting there is.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I'm going to shift gears here, still staying on the same topic, but going to shift it a little bit. There's a difference between a dad and a father. Mm. You know, dad is biologically who helped create that child, but a father's present. And if you don't believe there's a difference, if you ask a coach or ask somebody that's played sports who their favorite coach was, I guarantee they say, it was this guy, if it was a male, and why he cared a lot, and he was a father figure type for me. No one ever says he was like a dad. He's a father figure type. Like, and I believe fathers have this unique opportunity and power in children's lives. I know from my dad, I just always remember like how he moved. My dad was 6'8" and played basketball. He was like my model, you know, of like what I wanted to be like. And it really wasn't honestly, Climo was never like, man, I've seen him play. It was just his presence and seeing him there. It meant a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget what he would always tell me after games. Like I would hang on to that more than anybody. You know, I listened to my coach, listened to my mom, listened to, you know, someone else. But like when my dad said it, it was like, okay, I got to do that. So my point is this, for this next one that we're going to talk on, is what are the important things that our kids need to hear us say? What are the important things that our kids need to see us do? And that could be related to sports or not related to sports.
Show up. That's one. And I joke about this, but rule one of life, show up. We'll figure everything else out. So that be at work, be it as a parent, be it as a colleague, be it as a student, just show up. Pound the stone, right? Chop wood, carry water. It's, you know, you do that enough, your children see your work ethic, they see what you're about, and it rubs off, right? The apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. And so I think you can put a lot of things into your comment about seeing my dad at the game, listening to him, the relationship that you had with him that allowed that information flow to happen can be very different, right? And you'll laugh at this when your daughter gets older, that you're going to at some point be in a position to give her basketball advice and she's not going to hear it because you're dead and she can't separate that from coach. And so, you know, you would think with my children sometimes that I have no idea what I'm talking about when it comes to the game of basketball, because I'll offer something and it's like, no, it's like, okay, great. And you can take that personally, or, you know, you can just understand that they're having trouble with role definition in regards to what hat are you wearing in any given moment. And they're also choosing to be independent and to go get their information somewhere else, which is the space and the growth that they need. And so I think, and I got a few things that I think touch on this, is I made this comment earlier about being at games and being a parent in the stands, and do you need to be at every game? And I read something a long time ago that was, look, if you're always there, you take away your kid's power of story. And what does that mean? Well, if you're always there, you were there, you experienced it with them. There's no conversation about, hey, how did it go? What was it like? Any of that, because you were there. And so I made, you know, this is going to sound terrible, but we've made a conscious choice not to be present at all of their games. And one of the guys I had on the pod that's a mentor of mine, you know, he made a similar decision that was like, you know, I never go to more than 50% of my kids' games because they got to learn I'm not going to be here their whole lives and they got to learn how to cope. And he's also a very established college basketball coach and sits up in the stands in the corner of his kids' games and doesn't say a word, just like you would expect. And he said, every year someone comes over and they sit down next to me and they start bashing the coach. And he's like, you know, I don't know why he's doing this. Your kids should be playing more. He said, I nip that in the bud. Once a year, I look at that person and I say, hey, I think Mo Williams is the greatest coach on the face of the planet. And it's like, so all of a sudden, right, he throws the support behind that. What do those people now have to do? Well, hey, if this guy who is actually in this role is saying that, well, then I must have it wrong. Or they can continue their own narrative, right? And so your point about dads and fathers, I'm in a very unique situation where I work at the school my kids go to. We live on the campus. I see them in everything they do. And I have had to make a conscious choice to separate myself from a lot of that to give them the space they need to grow, because the average kid gets to leave the house, go to school, come home, and tell their story. My kids don't always have that. Like, I'm going to have a conversation with my daughter later on this afternoon based on something that I know has happened because of the community that I am in. And I get to go in and have this conversation, which I probably wouldn't know about if I didn't work here. And it creates this really interesting dynamic where I have to constantly be evaluating the role I'm in, what hat am I wearing, and what is the job I need to do in this situation. And Mo, I've crossed that line so many times that it makes their lives difficult. Why can't you just be a normal dad? Why can't you just be a normal parent? Why you always got to be in coach mode or advisor mode? And I find myself like, I am much more forgiving of my players and my advisees than I am of my children. And I had to figure out why. And I asked myself, it's like, why if I give advice to this kid who's on my team or who's in my advisory group and they don't take it, like, it's like, okay, cool. I did the best I can. And the kid has to make choices. When I give that same exact advice to my kid and they don't take it, like, I get hot and I realize it's because it's emotional, because I'm way more invested in whether or not they take the advice and do what needs to be done than the kid where it was a job. I did everything I could. They had to make their choices. And I saw that's something I've had to figure out to kind of walk myself back a little bit more, to realize, like, all I can do is give information, especially as they get older. One of my best buddies told me this a couple years ago. He's Klein. He said, it's not going to be dictatorial their whole life. Up until a certain point, you can dictate how things are going to go. And then it's just information sharing. Here's what I have to offer you. You got to make choices. You have freedom of choice. You don't have freedom of consequence. And they got to go live with that.
I'm learning from this. I'm writing notes as you're talking. I'm not saying that either. It's good stuff. But going back to my question, man, I answered it myself. And those two things that I know I will say to my daughter is, I don't need you to be the best. I want your best.
Yeah, I like that.
And then I think the next thing is that I'm proud of you. Like, I'm proud of you. I think discipline is extremely important. I think that's very important. You give me any goal that is achieved without discipline, and I'd tell you, I'd probably end the goal. It probably wasn't that hard to begin with. You need discipline. Discipline is usually the bridge from self to what you want to get to. But where I'm getting at is, you were sharing about, you know, when you were growing up, your upbringing. You know, I'm younger than you, but discipline was probably very similar. You know, it was some type of physical, you know, not force, but it was done in some type of physical way, where I was at a Starbucks with someone, and I heard a parent say, I'm disappointed in you. And the kid, like, lost it and, like, just completely, like, straightened up. And I was like, I've never seen that. And he said, yeah, I just value the power of words opposed to using force and teaching discipline. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, you know, as I think about myself and how I'm wired, I really value being young, being heard that I'm proud of you. But I would have felt the exact same force of disappointment if I was told, hey, I'm disappointed in you, in that decision. Mm-hmm. Not you as a human being, but that decision I'm disappointed in. And I thought that was really, really a different perspective that I've ever heard. And I thought, being a parent, I now have the opportunity to create what that discipline looks like. I don't have to create what I've always seen or what I've always done. You really have an opportunity to rewire what discipline looks like. So as I was answering that, you know, I'm proud of you is going to be a statement that's going to hold a lot of power when I say that to my daughter. But the flip side of that, when it comes to discipline, is going to be the disappointment, you know, word. So I thought that was really good stuff, man. And again, I pulled a lot from you while you were answering that, because those are really good things. And again, you've been in the trenches and still are in the trenches. I didn't really take into account as well until I started hearing you explain just proximity, how close everything is, and, you know, how much that would feel on a child. So, man, that's a great perspective, and I appreciate your transparency on that. Yeah, man, I didn't know if you had anything else just on that question that we just finished up.
Yeah, I would say that figuring out systems, let's use that word, right? We're coaches. You use the word, the idea of being a coach in your interactions with other people just in general. That's the hat you wear, right? So you're going to be coaching your child throughout life, which is also part of parenting. And so having intentional systems in place for how you want to do things is what you're talking about, right? So the power of I'm proud of you, especially from a father-daughter standpoint, and then especially from a father-son standpoint, is really important. And hell, the group we're in, the insecurities identity piece, where as men who probably weren't taught to emote when we were children, and then figuring out how to show emotion and how to do those things in a positive way for our kids is hard. And so the fact that you're already thinking about these things, and you got a two-year-old where, you know, I, like you said, I was just in the trenches trying to do the best we could, is really thoughtful. And the idea of disciplining from a standpoint of I'm disappointed. And I think what you said was really important. It's not I'm disappointed in you. I'm disappointed in that decision. And here's why. And because the way in which that lands is very different. And even if you phrased it perfectly, what we say and what people hear are not the same thing. And so being able to have the feedback loop where you can constantly go back is important. And then the other thing that I will add for me that is a constant struggle based on what you described as the scenario I'm in. I mean, I'm in my office right now. I'm looking out over the pool. I'm in the middle of the residential buildings. The pathway between the academic side of campus and my house, my daughters walk by 2, 3, 4 times a day. And they always look over the office to see what's dad doing. And so I can summon them. I can wave. I can ignore them, whatever it might be. But then I also got to juggle, you know, kid walking in my office, my daughter crying. Hey, I just had this conversation with this teacher. I quit. It's like, okay, talk it out. Vent. I'm not going to solve this, whatever. She just need to get off her chest, walk away. But then I'm able to go back to that coach because I'm the AD and I'm the boys coach. She's the girls coach. And it's like, hey, you might want to have a follow-up. I don't think what your intention landed the way you wanted. What do you mean? I'm just, she came in the office crying, wasn't pretty. You might want to circle back. And that to where we talked about parenting and our roles earlier, that I feel is an appropriate conversation, not how dare you say this or you should be doing. It's just like, hey, that, I don't know what you were trying to say. It didn't land well. You might want to go back and try to, you know, figure that one out. And that's been super helpful. And the other piece, Mo, is your kids are only going to listen to so much from you, right? You just give information. They're tired of hearing it. You're the broken record, the Charlie Brown, you know, at some point. And it's like, how do you use the resources in your life and the mentors that they are around to co-parent your kids? So if there's a message that needs to be had that I can't deliver, I'm calling, texting her advisor, her coach, you know, the gal that, you know, was their nanny when they were little, that's a big part of their life. And it's like, hey, I need you to take her out. This is what's going on. Appreciate any input you have here. And not steering like, hey, I need them to hear this, but it's like, they need perspective and they're not hearing me. And so utilizing that has been super important and super powerful. And I'll tell you the truth, I'm actually a little bit worried next year because the woman, the coach that was my middle child's advisor is leaving. She's taking another job. And so my kid had to pick a new advisor. And it's like, well, who should I pick? And I'm sitting here like, well, you should pick. And it's like, you know, and then, you know, she's got her old advisor saying, hey, you don't want to do that because his opinion is going to be the same as your dad's. You need different perspective. It's like, great. Right. And so now I need to navigate a new relationship in order to make sure she's getting the support she needs. And I'm playing the role I can, which is dad. Right. What are the hats that dad wears? And when that hat changes, how does that benefit or damage the relationship? And that's been, you know, something that I've had to walk back a million times. And I'll just give you one for the listeners. It might resonate. It might not. You know, there was an incident when my kid was a sophomore that I had heard about. Got a call from a colleague. It was like, hey, you might want to check in on this. And I was like, great, appreciate the information. Text my daughter, come to my office now. And it's like, and we talked about it, blow up, she's melting down, goes down to the rest of campus. And it's this huge ordeal where for me, it was really just a shot across the bow. But doing it in that way where she's coming to my office as the athletic director in the middle of the day and receiving it in that way really blurred the lines between, hey, this is a family matter and we're having a conversation as a father and a daughter to, hey, no, this is a big deal at the school and you're going to get dealt with. And I think I had to learn that lesson and learn how to press pause and be responsive rather than reactive and find the right time to have these conversations.
It takes a village to raise a child. And I think, you know, we're in this stage right now in the sense of intentionally putting those people in that village for her and understanding that she's not always going to be able to need to be fed just from us. She's going to need those other people in the village that can feed her. And as I listen to you speak about that, I think about just maybe as a parent going the other way and just thinking, I have to figure out all these answers. I have to do all these things. It needs to come from me. I have to do this. Where in reality, if you're setting up the right village, it's impossible for that child to not be successful and grow and move into the spaces that you and I are talking about. And you obviously got to have an openness of perspectives differently from yours to allow that village to let that child grow too. So good stuff, man. Again, I don't know for the listeners what they took from that segment there, but I got a page full of notes. And I think I got asked this the other day about being a head coach, and I use being a father as a reference. You can prepare as much as you want, but you're never truly ready. You have to embrace everything that comes with it. You have to know by watching your film, so replaying things that have happened before, how to tweak it, how to be better, and then creating your village, which, you know, you and I are talking about, and what I kind of
give you this really quick, Mo, and then move on to whatever we're going to do next. On that note, the after action report, right, the military version of film study, is super important. And I often find myself now, not when I was a younger parent. And so here's a life hack. If you want to jump to the end of the line, now that I've got three children and I'm learning with each one of them, and the oldest is always the guinea pig on this thing, right? We're going to make a ton of mistakes with that one that the others will benefit from. But it's, you know, whatever argument happens or disagreement, and then it's like, turn to your partner who hopefully was there too. And it's like, yo, how could I have handled that better? Right. And then if you have to go do damage control, then you got to wear that and go back in. And so I think that's been something that I've been able to pick up on, especially because my oldest is hard headed and we're very similar and we butt heads and get into it. And there's almost like this, oh, they're going to kill each other. And it's like, no, we're just communicating. We're getting to the other side. So it's not hanging over us. And it's a little bit emotional, but we always end up in a good place. And then I'm always asking the question, you know, hey, what could I have done differently? And then I got to go roll that back if I need to. Or I like, nope, I did that right. And she's just going to be upset and frustrated.
Let's move to this last segment here, man. You also are a host and creator of your own podcast. I believe it's called Contacts. Is that correct?
Yes, that is one show.
Got you. So, oh, you got two. Got you. I got you. Well, this is why I wanted to create this space, man, for you to just talk about those. And yeah, what is kind of the motive and intentions behind them? I've listened to Contacts, so but I want the creator and the host to talk about it.
There you go. Well, you've also been recorded on Contacts, but your episode hasn't dropped yet. We'll get that out there probably this summer at some point. But I have two shows. Started them as a COVID win, had some time and space, and started thinking about how can I support my coaches with the mentorship resources that I have. And so the title is a play on words. I've got 4,000 people in my phone that I can pick up the phone and call because I'm a network guy. And how do I give them access to my contact list to help mentor them? And so that podcast is a coaching podcast, which essentially is the same questions. How did you get into this? What's the best thing that you do? What advice would you have for your younger self? What have you most recently changed your mind on? And things like that, that are cross-disciplinary conversations about coaching and leadership. And the other one is called Why Sports, which if you'll go all the way back to the beginning of this conversation, and you know why I think sports are important, but it's to tease that out for people that may or may not understand the value of athletics as a holistic education tool for people in whatever they're going to do. And on that show, we interview professionals across industry, doctors, lawyers, chefs, financial people, actors, directors, and talk about, hey, how is sports foundational in your life and what lessons pop up regularly on your journey? And again, trying to tease out, hey, this is why sports are important. And what you mentioned, discipline, failure, resilience, reps, things that you can't get anywhere else. And so the two shows focus on that. And the idea is really just to put information out there and perspective and points of view. And you've listened to Contacts, it's the same 7 or 8 questions, and you get a million different perspectives that you can steal a few nuggets here and there, with the idea being, you know, not you go to these clinics and you pick up these X's and O's, but what are the overarching conceptual thematic things that successful people do no matter what? And that's the design of that. Again, from the vein of, I'm one voice to my coaches. Here's all these other voices that you can now listen to get help, mentorship, inspiration, and ideas.
Love it, man. You showed us a little bit of that UC Davis education with some of the words you use in there, man. Don't think I didn't hear what you used, some of the words you use, man. That's nice. I'm messing with you.
Go Eggs.
How can someone find this stuff, Coach?
I'm working on my social media game. I was very anti-social media until I started this, and then I had to figure out how to promote the pod and try to get the information into people's hands. And again, this is kind of like a passion project, something to keep me entertained and invested. And I think I told you guys this. I feel like I've had a personal PhD in the last 14 months, having 100 hours of conversations with people and just learning. And so I'm at Jay Climo on all platforms. And the podcast has its own handle at Contacts Podcast and at Y Sports Pod. We also have a spinoff called At 5 Second Version, which is where we take snippets of under a minute from each of these interviews and put a little audiogram out there that are super accessible, because we realize that the attention span of most people is about what mine is. And so the 60-second nugget is a perfect sample size, and 5 second version came out of my inability to focus. And when people would try to explain something to me, and I would say, just give me the 5 second version.
Appreciate the transparency, man. Last segment, man, final words. Always give the guests final words as you depart. Anything in your heart that you want to leave?
Figure out how to prepare your child to the best that you can for the uncertainty that is to come, not trying to do everything for them. We are not going to be here at some point, and they got to be able to navigate that. So are you giving them the tools to navigate life's twists and turns, or are you, for lack of a better phrase, chopping their legs out from under them by, you know, not allowing them to figure this stuff out on their own? How do you teach them to self-advocate? How do you teach them to be independent? And I'll tell you this, Mo, this is the last thing. I say this all the time, especially as a father of a daughter. My job was to get her to be a strong, confident, independent young woman when she leaves the house. That was it. And how do you do that? All the other stuff is just part of the minutia in the toolbox. But what's the outcome you're trying to reach? Can they stand on their own 2 feet when they walk out the front door at, in theory, 18.
Good stuff, man. Well, appreciate you having on. Appreciate your time. And we are signing off.